Okay, so let us start. Let us start off by talking a little bit about meditation practice before we try it out. And as always, one of the important things to make meditation work is the attitude that we have in our meditation. Get the attitude right, and it tends to flow very easily as a consequence. And the reason for that is because meditation is largely an emotional thing. It's about building up positive emotions. And the more positive the emotions are, and the more peaceful you are, the more you're heading in the right direction as far as meditation is concerned. So when we talk about giving rise to having the right attitude, very often it's just a very gentle nudging of the mind. It's a nudging that you can do during the process of meditation itself. It's a very gentle thing. It's a bit like giving rise to a particular perception, viewing the world in a certain way. It's not a forceful thing where you think a lot or you try to use the mind in a very coarse kind of way. It's a very gentle little thing that we do just to steer the mind in the right direction. And one, the Buddha gives numerous ways of how to do this. And one of the ways that he talks about, which is very topical right now, because this is the Vaisak season. Vaisak season is the time we kind of celebrate the Buddha and his life and all of these things. That is the recollection or the memory of the Buddha himself, who he was as a person. How to use this to allow us to kind of gain that positive outlook and the right attitude as we do our meditation practice. And one way of doing this, the Buddha actually talks about this at a bit of length in his own discourses. But one way of doing this is to focus on two qualities of the Buddha. One is the wisdom aspect, and the other one is the compassion aspect. And both of these qualities, what they point to in the end, is really that the Buddha, he was the greatest spiritual master in recorded history. That's already quite a thing to focus on, and it's quite a thing which can easily give rise to joy and gladness if you think about that in the right way. The teacher that we all have in common, that all kind of lies behind everything that we do in Buddhism, is essentially the greatest spiritual master that has existed, certainly in recorded history. What a marvelous thing that is. But to bring that out a bit more, there's two ideas of wisdom and compassion. And the wisdom aspect, really, what it means is that one way of looking at it is that the Buddha had a full understanding of human happiness and suffering. He had the whole realm of happiness and suffering, including things such as rebirth, which of course also matters to understand this fully. And not only did he have a full understanding of these things, but also a full understanding how to reach the maximum potential of happiness and reduce suffering as much as possible. So the full grasp of these things. And because happiness and suffering are the core drivers in our life, these are the things that make us act, that make us do anything in existence. These are like the fundamental things that make our existence meaningful or meaningless. Happiness and suffering. Without that, we would be like rocks. Nothing would really happen. So someone who has a full understanding of that, he has a full understanding of the human condition, and for that reason, he has basically understood the very meaning of life itself. That is a claim about the Buddha, and again, it's kind of awesome and amazing. And once you get that idea, again, it is something that can support you in a positive way in terms of your outlook. The other side of the Buddha, not only does he have that insight, but his teachings are based on compassion and nothing else. The vast majority of teachers in the world, they have all kind of reasons, all kind of motivations that make them teach. But for the Buddha, compassion is the only thing that drives him. He knows he has the answer to the innermost desires in human beings. And because he knows he has the answer, he teaches, even though for himself, actually, it is detrimental, because he has to move away from his own peace and his own meditation practice to be able to help others. He's purely motivated by compassion. This is really the only driving force in the Buddha's life. That is all that he has. So these two things together, compassion and wisdom, is really who the Buddha is. If you were to be able to look into the Buddha's mind, perhaps, this is the two things that you might see there, and nothing much beside that, perhaps. And if you think about the Buddha in this way, then perhaps it starts to give you this feeling that the teacher that you have, the teacher who underlies this whole Buddhist movement, is something really remarkable and special. So you can try that, see if that works. If you find that hard and it doesn't really work, it can be useful sometimes to expand that perception out, not just limit it to the Buddha, but expand it out to everyone we call a Kalyanamitta, a good friend on the Buddhist path. And that would be things, people like the monastic community, but also the entire Buddhist community. Everyone who comes here to Dhammaloka Center, or indeed everyone at all that supports you in your spiritual practice. And just reflect for a second, what a wonderful thing it is to have a spiritual community like this. The Buddha, the Sangha, the monastic community, and all the lay people also who are there. Everyone really caring for each other in a very real sense. Everyone supporting each other, yeah, in various ways. And how fortunate it is to have that support in our life to enable us to practice this path properly. So, if you wish, you can try some of these perceptions to see if they have an effect on you. And if they do, hopefully they can give you a little bit of boost in your meditation practice. So now let us try it out in practice and see what happens. So, as usual, it is good to start out the meditation by finding the ease of the body and the ease of mind. Starting out with the ease of the body, being comfortable, and then just making sure that you relax fully. You feel really at ease, you feel good, you feel at home in your body, and a feeling that you can sit here for a long time. Make sure you take the time to do this. Because if you get that basic foundation right, then the ability for mindfulness to arise and the meditation to carry on is so much enhanced. And just gradually allow the world to fade away, simply by being patient, simply by observing whatever is there. It is as if you are substituting, moving from activity and doing, to merely being a passive observer, not doing anything at all, just standing back and watching, allowing everything to be, allowing everything to fade away. Just allow, if you can, this process to happen by itself, just by standing back and being aware of whatever is going on, and feeling that the mindfulness arises from that. The more you can stand back and allow the process to be, the more easy and the more delightful it becomes. See if you can observe that sense of being unburdened, of being free from doing, and how nice it is just to be an observing passenger on this trip of mindfulness and meditation. And whenever you feel ready, because your mindfulness is becoming established, please just go on to your meditation object, your breath, or whatever it is. And if as part of this process you need a little bit of a boost, a little bit of clearing up, clarifying your attitude, you can try the recollection of the Buddha. What a remarkable thing it is to have the world's greatest spiritual genius for your teacher. How fortunate that is. What kind of gratitude and thankfulness we all should have to be in such a position. And we are now coming very close to the end of the meditation. Before we come to the very end, just take a few moments just to reflect on what has happened over the past 45 minutes. If you feel a bit more peaceful and at ease, ask yourself why that is the case. How does this process of meditation actually work? Okay, are there any questions from anyone? Anything anyone would like to say? Okay, so let's take some questions from overseas. First one is, how does one cope with the hindrance of drowsiness? I keep drifting off or falling asleep and have been meditating for 2 years now. This is one of those very common hindrances. Yeah, two things that often happen in people is that either they get drowsy or they become restless and they think all the time. Very often it kind of alternates between those two things. And it can be hard to sometimes find that middle way between these things. The way to overcome that is to, very often the drowsiness and the restlessness actually comes from the first two hindrances. Either you have some, maybe a little bit of ill will in the mind, not enough metta, or it comes from too much attachment to the sensual world. And then when, because of attachment to the sensual world and the craving for the sensual things, once you block those off, the mind kind of blots out and doesn't have any power anymore. So the way to overcome that is to give up that sensual world a little bit more, to find more joy in Dhamma things. Reflect on the Buddha I was suggesting today. Reflect on your Kalyanamitas. Reflect on your spiritual life. Yeah, the fact that you have lived doing meditation practice for 2 years is a wonderful thing. Reflect on whatever precepts that you keep. And give that sense of spiritual joy in your life. And that sense of spiritual joy tends to overcome the drowsiness of the mind. Or it can sometimes. Sometimes it will not work. But really, it is the first two hindrances that you have to work on. That is where the drowsiness normally comes from. So if you can deal with those, have a bit more metta, compassion, develop more spiritual joy, then you should be on the right track. Don't give up. Keep on going. And eventually you will get there. It may take time, however. Question number two from Germany. How do you meditate when irritated by chronic illness, sickness? Should we focus on stillness or on the irritation? Ideally, you can just overlook the irritation, yeah, don't focus on it. If you can avoid focusing on it, and just focus on the peace and the positive qualities that are there in the meditation, and just allow the pain or the problem or whatever it is, leave it to one side. Ideally, that is the ideal way of getting around the meditation practice. That may not always work. Sometimes you may have to focus a little bit on the illness because it is very prominent. And sometimes you can focus on the illness with a sense of maybe metta and kindness or whatever, and you can dissolve some of that problem simply by focusing on it with kindness and with care and compassion. But generally speaking, chronic illness is difficult to deal with, and at the end of the day, you're just going to have to somehow try to accept that it is there. The more you can accept the sickness and the illness, once that acceptance starts to arise, then usually you are able to focus on the stillness and the meditation object and just allow it to be. The hardest part is often just to come to an acceptance of these things. Realize that it is the nature of the body, the nature of the mind to have these kind of illnesses sometimes. And sometimes there just isn't all that much that we can do about them. And once that kind of kicks in and you allow it to be, then it becomes much easier to keep your focus on the meditation object or the stillness. So it can be difficult, but if with persistence, you will be able to overcome almost any kind of meditation problem. So just keep on going, and you should be able to get there. Question from Poland. I have heard that during meditation, it is possible to activate a third eye on the forehead. Is this true? It is called third eye chakra. Third eye chakra. Chakra is a term used usually. Chakra means wheel, same as the word as chakra in Pali. And this is a term used in Hinduism, in Hindu yogis and that sort of thing, not really a thing that we use in Buddhism. But the idea of the third eye is really just an ability to see without the physical eyes, to see other realms and other things. And yes, it is possible to do that in Buddhism as well, supposedly. So what you have to do is just get into incredibly deep, powerful meditation, very deep samadhi, very powerful stillness. The deeper that stillness is, the more ability you will have to see all kind of stuff as a consequence of that. So the primary way of doing this is to get into very, very peaceful meditation. The more peaceful it is, the more powerful your mind becomes, and with a powerful mind, it's astonishing what you can do. And maybe you will be able to see things with your own third eye as a consequence. But often, it's a long path to get there. So if you want to do that, then good luck. It's not really the purpose of the Buddhist path. The purpose of the Buddhist path is to overcome suffering, to find happiness and all those things. But a little bit of playing around on the way can sometimes be okay as well. So good luck, and see what happens. But please focus on the main aspects of the Buddhist practice. Don't get too lost in these kind of extra things that seem exciting and interesting, perhaps. Okay, that's all for now. This is pay respect to the Buddha Dhamma Sangha.